was gonna get the score.
You can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan. Oh, you can shove your opinion dead up your ass right there with Hussein Obama's cock. Guess what, motherfucker? You know what's most likely? It's most likely that you are wrong and I am right. Welcome to my bitches and my bitchettes. This here is the great one himself from Cynical Libertarian Society, CYNLIBSOC.com on the internet. Set up my link shortener today, CLS.LINK, my link shortener. And this is Stating the Obvious Podcast, the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect that homes in on and destroys stupid motherfuckers all around the world. Oh yeah, that's what happens there. Yeah, that's how it is. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins, here in Colorado. You see me just drop that? That's awesome. All right. My fingers are obviously not functioning. It's a beautiful spring day here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. Thanks to global warming, there is snow being dumped outside. It's been snowing all fucking day long. And it's the wet, nasty, yucky snow that is sticking to all the trees and is going to fuck them up. And Randy, have I not been saying for the last, like, 3 weeks what we need to make bring this winter to a close is a really shitty snow when all the trees can get destroyed? And here it is. For those of you who don't live in Colorado, or at least northeastern Colorado where we're at, May is the most bizarre month out of the entire year. So far in May, it's only May the 11th. Today is May the 11th, 2014. And so far in May, we have had sun, we've had clouds, we've had like 2 days of rain, we've had an entire day of snow, we've had 30 degree weather, we've had 85 degree weather. In May, we get every fucking version of weather that the state of Colorado has. Snow, rain, sun, hot, cold, windy, guy with the fucking windstorms. It all comes May. It's May. It's all about May. Mother, may I? Yes, you may. Great one, may I? No, you may not. Shut the fuck up. Shut up. Don't interrupt me when I'm talking. I am the great one himself, Cynical Libertarian Society, CYNLIBSOC.com on the internet. In the control room, right over there looking cute and adorable, is the lovely Randy. She's hanging out doing her thing. You can email us. That's God, G-O-D, dog spelled backwards, at CYNLIBSOC.com. The theme song for Stating the Obvious Podcast is You Know I'm Right by David Gilmour. He's the guitar player for Pink Floyd. It's off his About Face album, released in 1984. Highly recommend it, along with all of his other solo albums, actually. Even though he is a left-wing statist cocksucker who's excruciatingly rich but loves to pretend he cares about poor people. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Mm-mm. All right, I got to probably put my e-cigarette down because I can't really record the podcast and habitually puff on the e-cigarette. So let's do this. As soon as I scratch my back, I need a back scratcher. I felt good. Randy, I could totally take a nap. right now. I had a beer on an empty stomach, and that was enough to make me want to do napping. But then Randy and I, we just ate, watched a little TV, had some food. We're going to do this podcast and possibly roll right into the second one. And then we're going to go make popcorn and watch some more movie. So this podcast, this is probably going to be a two-parter. And we're going to, by we, I mean I, am going to be talking about a book. The book is called The King of Sports. It's written by Greg Easterbrook. And this book is about football, the game of football, and assorted things about it. It was a absolutely fascinating read, and I obviously highly recommend you read this book, because that's why. Well, no, I guess actually I've talked about books I don't recommend you read in the context of making fun of them and stuff, so it would be inaccurate for me to say, of course, I recommend you should read it because I'm talking about it, because that's not really true all the time. But I do recommend you read this book. Before we do that, let's talk about something else, because, you know, I like to stay on topic and never digress. And since the topic of this podcast and the next one is going to be the book, The King of Sports, let's start by talking about something that has nothing to do with this book or sports or football or anything even remotely relevant, because that's how I roll. Also cough into the microphone a lot. YouTube. Of all the resources on the internet, YouTube, I've decided, in addition to having the stupidest commenters, as I've talked about before, the average intelligence, and I do mean average, of if you took all the commenters on YouTube and you averaged out their intelligence, the average intelligence of YouTube commenters, and by that I mean people who leave comments on YouTube videos, would come out to about 3 IQ points. But man, YouTube has on it. If you just ignore the comments, which is what I typically do, there's some shit on YouTube, man. YouTube has everything. The fact that people still even go to public school when we have YouTube makes me want to cry. If you want to learn advanced geometry, you just go to YouTube and you type in advanced geometry tutorial and the shit will show up. And yet we keep sending kids to public school. But that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about entertainment on YouTube. Because there's, man, you can get everything on YouTube. You can get tutorials, you can learn to do stuff, you can get edumacated, you can find podcasts like, you know, Stefan Molyneux and Larkin Rose and Aaron Cleary, and of course myself, the great one himself. There's all this information out there available on YouTube. But beyond that, there's so much good shit. I've talked before about finding the Pink Floyd bootlegs and the Led Zeppelin bootlegs and the Genesis bootlegs all put on YouTube for listening, and how I almost fucking creamed myself because I never thought about looking for them there. So anyhow, I was dinking with... Well, I'm scratching my back again. I really do need a back... Randy, why do we not have a back scratcher in here? The fuck? Why do I not have a little Polynesian girl slave to fucking scratch my back for me? What the hell? And that's sexist. Oh, shut the fuck up. So I was dealing with my Netflix queue. Yeah, would. I just watched Beavis and Butthead. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And I got another DVD from Netflix, a concert by New Order, one of my favorite bands. And this is the third, or is it the fourth? It's at least the third, maybe the fourth, New Order DVD I've gotten from Netflix that has been broken. It's like somebody has a vendetta against New Order or something and is breaking their fucking disc. So anyhow, I had to go in my Netflix queue to report that it was broken. And while in there, I noticed that on my saved list was a movie that I've been wanting to see from back in the day when we walked uphill. It's called Saturn 3. And it stars... Oh, God, what's... Randy, we're just sitting here looking at the movie. What the fuck was his name? You know, the old guy. There's only three people in the damn movie. The young guy is a nobody. The chick is Farrah Fawcett. That Farrah Fawcett Majors, which means nothing to you young kids. But back in the day when we walked uphill, she was hot. She was considered super hot. She was married to Lee Majors, who played the Bionic Man in the $6 Million Man TV series. And Farrah Fawcett was one of the original? Yeah, she was one of the three original Charlie's Angels. So she was a hottie patati and a cutie patootie, and she was also famous for her Farrah Fawcett hairstyle. It was all kind of curly and her big teeth, and she had this poster that sold like a motherfucker. Anyhow, so it's her and two other guys in this movie. It's called Saturn 3. And of course, it's not available on Netflix because it's apparently not available on DVD. It actually is, but Netflix doesn't have it because Netflix doesn't have a lot of stuff. And I saw that in the queue and I thought, you know, I wonder if that movie is on YouTube. So I went to YouTube and I type in Saturn 3 and shit, and sure enough, the entire movie, Saturn 3, is available on YouTube. So I downloaded it, burned it to a DVD so I can watch it in my television, because I hate watching long movies on the computer. It drives me crazy. Plus, if I'm in front of the computer, I usually want to be working and not watching movies. So anyhow, and the quality isn't that great, but I mean, it's good enough. I'm going to watch the movie one time and then I'm going to erase the DVD. I'm not like I'm bootlegging these things to like sell them or some shit. The quality's not that big of a deal. In case you're wondering, oh, and the software I use to do this, there's this little freeware program out there I found. It's called DVD Flick. DVD Flick, F-L-I-C-K. And for things like this, it's great because it's really low maintenance. You just grab the video file. So you download the video file from YouTube. You grab the video file. You dump it into the window there. You make sure it's just set to encode everything. You don't have to check the encoding. My brain is getting confused. Yeah, that takes a lot. You drop it in there. You check your settings. You make sure they're okay. Basically, you just make sure that you don't even have to build a menu. You just make sure it's set to automatically play the first feature. And then you make sure it's set for the right DVD size. You make sure it's set to burn an ISO image. And then you just hit, boom, encode. And it takes your video file. It encodes, builds it, everything into an ISO image, which you then just burn to a rewritable DVD, is what I use. Because whenever I make these movies, I'm not saving them. I just want to watch the damn thing once. Then I'm going to erase it, put another movie on there. And boom, then you burn the ISO to a DVD. You stick it in your DVD player. You can watch the movie off YouTube on your fucking television. And I know a lot of you are thinking, you old people, you watch TV on a television? Why, what's wrong with you? I know, I'm old. Fucking just fucking deal with it, all right? So anyhow, Saturn 3, I keep wanting to call it Saturn 5. Saturn 5 is the rocket that, that's my rocket, yeah. that's what she said. Saturn 5 is the rocket that launched men to the moon. Saturn 3 is the fairly terrible movie, and oh, the special effects are hilarious. You can tell everything is just like a little plastic model. Oh, it's so bad. But anyway, we're only like 20 minutes into it. It's about an hour and a half movie.
I know.
I just totally yawned. Jesus Christ, it is still fucking snowing its ass off out there. Look at that shit. Fuck. What the hell? Stop it. Fucking global warming. God damn it. Oh, we're all going to die. But remember, it's not global warming. It's climate change. And global warming doesn't mean it's going to get warmer. It means we're going to have more extreme weather. Yes, because extreme is a word that has no fucking meaning whatsoever. And yet you global warming wackos claim that you are scientists, that you engage in science, all the while using words that mean absolutely nothing. It's extreme weather. Fuck you. I got some extreme cock you can shove in your fucking throat. Anyway, back to YouTube. And you can't find cocks being shoved into throats on YouTube. They don't really allow that sort of thing, which is kind of lame. But you can't find those things on YouPorn, youporn.com. Not that I've heard about it. I've never actually gone to youporn.com, but I read on the internet that if you go there, you can find pornography. Speaking of pornography, let's talk about anime. So while I'm on YouTube, see, I have, back in the day, back when I was your age, anime was just starting to emerge from Japan and become a thing over here in the United States. And unlike you little spoiled kids these days who never had to walk uphill 25 miles in your life, all of your anime is on DVDs or on the internet, and it has subtitles or it has dubs with English or whatnot. When I was your age and we were watching anime, we got our fucking anime. Our anime was a fucking VHS tape that was a copy of a copy of a copy that somebody recorded off their television in Japan. And there were no fucking subtitles, and there wasn't any kind of English dubs on this shit. So anyhow, I have a stack, about, 12 of them, Randy? I have about 12 VHS tapes loaded with anime, most of which is fucking amazing. There's a couple of duds in there, but most of it, fucking amazing. But I never watch it anymore, because first of all, like, I have time, but I may have a little bit of time, I throw some in, but it's VHS, who wants to deal with that shit? So it occurred to me, wait a minute, everything, as I'm downloading Saturn 3 from YouTube, I'm like, hey, dumbass, all of this anime is probably on YouTube. So I started looking around. I found, and I didn't look, this was the only title I could, I found a bunch of the Lupin movies on there. If you don't know who Lupin the Third is, well, sorry, just fucking Google Lupin the Third. The Lupin series and the movies are fucking awesome. I love Lupin. And I also found a 720p copy of, I haven't actually looked at it to see what the quality is, but I downloaded it, of Blackmagic M66, which is also super fucking classic anime from back in the day. It's from the same guy who did Appleseed and Ghost in the Shell, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his name because he's Japanese, obviously, and I would just fuck his name up royally, so I'm not even going to embarrass myself by trying to say it. Also, while on the YouTube, just looking in the little sidebar to the right where it shows related stuff, I saw, there it is, on YouTube, the full movie, this movie that I have been looking for ages. This is like right up there with Saturn 3. It's the same thing. It's like, okay, I know the movie is not great, but I remember it from back in the day when I was a kid and everything, and I just want to see it again for nostalgia's sake. Day of the Triffids. Not the British television version of the book. So Day of the Triffids was originally a book written by, I think it was a British author, because it takes place in England, but I could be wrong about that. It's a really good book, actually, too. I only read the book a couple of years ago, because for a long time I didn't know that it was a book. Anyway, I read the book, Day of the Triffids. I don't remember the author's name, but it's really good. I highly recommend it. And it's about plants that eat meat, including humans, you know, taking over the world, because what happens is there is this meteor storm, and everybody who looks at the meteor storm, and everybody goes out to look at it, of course, something with that causes everybody who looks at it to go blind. And so most of the population of the planet Earth is completely blind, and there's all these man-eating plants running around eating people, and they have to deal with it. So there is a British remake, a British company made a movie, movie for television version of Day of the Triffids, which was very true to the novel. I'm going to learn to fucking compose my thoughts and talk any fucking moment now. So anyhow, the British TV movie version is very, very, very close to the book. But way back in the day, when we all walked uphill, there was an American version of Day of the Triffids made, black and white movie, which I don't remember much of it, which is why I want to see it. But I'm pretty damn sure it's not that closely related to the book. And I sort of vaguely remember the ending, but not that much. So anyhow, I found that movie on YouTube. I'm like, holy shit. So I downloaded that. I'm going to watch that soon and see if it is, in fact, as bad as I remember. And I'm sure it is as bad as I remember. All right, Randy, how are we doing? Yes, we are 20 minutes into the podcast, and I have not yet talked about what I'm supposed to be talking about. We are right on schedule. This is how I roll. All right. We're really lucky this will be a three-parter, but I'm going to try to get this in two parts because I'm done for now with all of the digressing. Let's focus on the book. This book, The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America by Greg Easterbrook. He is apparently also the author of, well, not apparently, he is. It says so right here on the cover of the book, so it must be true. He is the author of a book called Tuesday Morning Quarterback, which I have not read and don't know anything about. All right, let me delve into this. It's going to be my usual extended book discussion concept. I'm going to read from the book, and then I'm going to give my opinions, yada, yada, yada. We're on page 41. We're reading the last full paragraph. So what this book is, here's kind of an overview of the book. The overview of the book is an overview of the book is that in this book he is presenting his opinions on what is right and what is wrong with football in the United States, the way it is run, financed, operated, like everything, the whole shebang. And it's just it's his analysis of the way our country approaches football, views football. So he covers a lot of ground in this. And some of it is certainly positive. Much of it is certainly negative because there is plenty of reason to have some negative opinions about football. All right, let me get into this. Page 41, last paragraph. Okay, and here he's talking about the Virginia Tech football team, which is one of the college teams that he admires a lot because he thinks the coach there, whose name I forgot, he'll probably come up somewhere in here, he thinks the coach there is doing things correctly as opposed to most college football programs where the levels of corruption and bullshit are astronomical. And so he opens and closes the book with some in-depth looks at the Virginia Tech college football program. And that's what we're talking about right here. All right, I'm reading now. Most home games are on Saturdays. On the Friday night before, the team has dinner at a steakhouse, then stays in the best hotel in Roanoke, half an hour from the school to get away from campus distractions. The Friday night feast at the farmhouse
if I can articulate correctly, in the perfectly named Christiansburg, Virginia, follows a strict routine. Balin calls the players up to a buffet table in order of their GPAs. Star players may sit feeling hungry as they watch third stringers, who are doing well in the classroom, get first choice of the steaks and prime rib. Simply by observing the order in which players walk up, everyone knows who is excelling academically and who is bringing up the rear. And he talks about this because something he talks about a lot in this book is how in college football plans, college football programs, boy, it's a good thing this isn't a podcast or anything where I have to actually be able to fucking articulate myself. Typically in college football programs, academics are given lip service, and he talks about that, how they're given lip service both officially and unofficially. But in reality, what really matters is what happens on the field. I mean, you've all heard the stories, the football players don't go to class, and he tells those stories and how the football players are supposed to have jobs, but they don't really have jobs, they just have jobs on paper, and you know, just all the abuse of the system in order to keep the good players on the field and keep them from getting in trouble so that the college can win football games.
and at the Virginia Tech College program. He singles this out because one of the things he likes about that school and their football program is that they do actually emphasize grades, as illustrated by that little story right there. Next, we're jumping to... And of course, I mean, football players are not known for their intelligence. And why is that? Is it because only stupid people want to play football? Well, I doubt that. I mean, this is what's the most likely. I mean, God, let me just, you know, talk about more of what's in the book. And what most of you probably know from just common sense and life experience. What's important to college football teams is winning football games. And anything that prevents the star players from playing and cuts down on the star players' practice time and yada, 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 that's got to go. Apparently, and I learned a lot of stuff about football that I did not know from reading this book. Like, for example, apparently in college football, there's a limit to how many hours you're supposed to spend practicing. But many of the schools ignore this and they get away with it. Probably, you know, there's no way to really monitor it. And what are you going to do? I mean, if all the schools are spending more time practicing, is the College Football Association or whatever it's called, are they going to shut down all these schools? And how are they going to make money? Yada, yada, yada. So forth and so on. All right, page 66. And all right, we're on page 66. Oh, here we go. Ah, yes, corruption. Speaking of corruption, let's talk about football and the state. Here's what I learned that I didn't know. The NFL, not individual NFL teams like the Dallas Cowboys and the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks, but the NFL itself, the umbrella organization, is a tax-exempt charity. Yes, you heard me correctly. The NFL is a charity organization and is therefore tax-exempt. There's your statism for you. For all you people who are like, well, churches should pay taxes, and they should. Actually, they shouldn't, because, of course, as I've said a million times, there should be no taxes. But if we're going to have taxes, and we are going to have taxes, we have taxes, we shouldn't have taxes. Taxation is theft. Taxation is morally wrong. Right? But it's like, okay, if we're going to kill some of the Jews, we should kill all of the Jews, right? If we're going to have some black people on plantations, we should have all the black people on plantations. Let's spread it around. It's the same thing with taxes. If we're going to engage in the immorality that is taxation, then we need to tax everybody equally. Tax everybody equally. Oh, God. Churches, of course, should pay taxes. So should charities. No matter, you know, all the maybe I'll rant about this some other time. But I was thinking the other day. Here we go. We're digressing. God damn it. I was thinking the other day about fucking charity organizations. All these fucking we're here to help the children. And oh, we help alcoholic children recover. It's like, why are these fucking people not paying taxes? Right? Corporations, the evil corporations, well, actually, they don't pay taxes either because they have good lobbyists. But people who own businesses that actually do good things, that actually contribute to the economy and create value for other people, they have to pay taxes. But nonprofit organizations that would not exist without alcoholic children and therefore seek to perpetuate alcoholic children, they get tax-exempt status. They don't have to pay taxes. Like, what the fuck? Why is it people who actually contribute to society have to pay taxes, but people that are parasites don't? Oh, wait, because they're parasites. The government needs parasites. The government is dependent upon parasites to vote for the government to keep the government in power. What am I talking about? I already know this shit. Okay, it says nothing to do with football. Let me shut up and read to you. This is going to be a long one because this is almost two full pages. So brace yourself, and I'm sure I will add commentary
because there's no way I can wait till I've read all of this to add commentary. All right, stop digressing. Yes, ma'am. I'm on it. Yes, I hear you. Yes. Randy's going to bitch slap me. If this goes into three parts, she's going to kill me. All right, here we go. I've died before. What's the big deal? Congress granted antitrust waivers to the NFL in two stages. The first was the 1961 Sports Broadcasting Act, which conferred legal permission for NFL headquarters to negotiate television deals as if the NFL were a single entity. Then in 1966, Congress enacted Public Law 89-800, which granted the NFL a general antitrust exclusion. Unlike car makers or beer brewers or restaurant chains or electronics manufacturers, the NFL is exempt from antitrust rules, making it much easier for the league's feudal families to rake in money. Let me digress, well, not digress, but let me interject here for a moment. And remember, all the people who own NFL teams are almost exclusively rich white men. So for those of you out there who are left-wing statist and hate rich people but love football, again, this is why I can't fucking stand left-wingers. This is why I can tolerate right-wing statists slightly more than left-wing statists. Because right-wing statists love rich white people and they love football. Left-wing statists who hate rich white people and yet love football really confuse the fuck out of me, because you're worshiping a sport that puts more money in the pockets of rich white men, and you're really fucking stupid. All right, anyway, back to reading. Public Law 89-800 had no name, the way laws have names such as Patriot Act or Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, in order to keep the bill as low profile as possible. Congress wanted the bill to be low profile since the purpose of the legislation was to increase NFL owners' wealth at the expense of average people. While Public Law 89-800 was being negotiated with congressional leaders, NFL lobbyists tossed in the sort of obscure provision that is essential to the lobbyist art. The phrase, quote, professional football leagues, was added to Section 501(c)(6) of 26 U.S.C., the Internal Revenue Code. Surely you've heard of Section 501(c)(6) of 26 U.S.C. Previously, a sentence in Section 501(c)(6) granted not-for-profit status to, quote, chambers of commerce, real estate boards, and boards of trade, unquote. Since 1966, the sentence has read, quote, chambers of commerce, real estate boards, boards of trade, or professional football leagues, unquote. Now, this is interesting. If I started a professional football league, would I get tax-exempt status? And what exactly does one have to do to be a professional football league? Interesting loophole. Of course, it won't work because the state will say that you can't do that, because if I tried to start a professional football league and claim tax-exempt status, I would get killed by the government, because I'm not pouring billions and billions of dollars into the government to buy and bribe and own politicians the way the NFL does. All right, back to reading. The insertion of, quote, professional football leagues, unquote, into the Internal Revenue Code definition of not-for-profit organizations was a transparent sellout of the public interest. The lobbyist-written phrase has saved the NFL hundreds of millions of dollars in tax obligations, which mean either that average people must pay higher taxes or the national debt must be increased. Let me say at this point that the guy who wrote this book, Greg Easterbrook, I mean, he's mostly got his shit together, but he's obviously not an ANCAP, because if he was, he would realize, of course, that this really isn't doing that. You're paying, the fact that the NFL isn't paying taxes doesn't mean there's more debt than there would be, nor does it mean people are paying more taxes. Because the government, again, the government spends the amount of money it wants to spend
whether the government has the money or not. That's why there is a national debt. So I just want to be clear about that, because I don't want you to think that, well, no, if only the NFL paid taxes, taxes for everybody would go down, or part of the debt would be paid off. I mean, that's not true. I still think the NFL should pay taxes if we're going to have taxes, and I still think there should be no taxes, certainly not income taxes. But if the NFL tomorrow started paying income taxes, this isn't going to reduce the national debt or reduce your taxes. The government will simply spend more money. Okay. Needed a big drink of water there, and it is still fucking dumping snow. God damn it. Tomorrow's my one day off. And by day off, I mean day that I'll be at home working. Ugh. Continue reading, page 67. Nonprofit status applies to the NFL's headquarters, which administers the league and its all-important television contracts, and to the NFL Management Council, which conducts pro football's labor negotiations. The Form 990 of the NFL Management Council covering 2010 shows the NFL used that organization's nonprofit fiction to shield $35 million from taxation while donating $850,000 to charity, meaning 2% of the money exempted from taxes was given away. Individual teams are for-profit and pay income taxes. In addition to allowing NFL headquarters to evade taxes on itself, the phrase slipped into Section 501c of 26 USC helps give the league a powerful tool for claiming another favor: tax-free bonds. Lucas Oil Stadium, the gleaming new field where the Colts perform, cost Indiana taxpayers $615 million in subsidies, plus another $2 million in tax exemptions. That dwarfed a $100 million NFL capital contribution, and the icing on the cake was that the borrowing was tax-free. Tax-free bonds have been used to underwrite construction of many NFL stadia, including the ones where the Browns, Cowboys, and Ravens perform. The NFL's ability to obtain tax exemptions for investors represents a huge hidden subsidy to professional football's landed families, to say nothing of the Wall Street investment bank houses that structure the deals. Tax-free bonds were originally devised to aid local governments and public service organizations. As recently as 1986, Congress said they should not be employed for business ventures such as professional sports. Lobbyists for the NFL and for professional basketball and baseball have quietly arranged with legislators to alter keywords of state and federal laws to keep tax-free financing available to the wealthy while average people pay full boat for loans, then subsidize Wall Street bailouts. But it's okay, right, to subsidize the Wall Street bailouts. I mean, because after all, Obama is the president, and he's the Messiah. And if you're not in favor of bailing out the banking corporations who made really bad decisions about what to do with money, well, then you obviously hate black people, right? And you probably hate children, and you hate homosexuals. Speaking of homosexuals, I was watching some Aaron Cleary videos today, and he said something that I thought was pretty fucking brilliant, talking about fat acceptance. What? Yes, I am going off topic. Have we met? Do you know me? Just shush. Shush. Randy, shush. I'm doing this. This is my podcast. I know, we will not go into a third part. I promise. I swear to God. Yes, I am an atheist. I swear to God, we will not go into a third part. All right. The more shit you give me, the longer this goes on. All right. So, Aaron Cleary, a.k.a. Cap'n Capitalism. Cap'n Capitalism? The Cappy was talking about fat acceptance and how bullshit is, and how women like go up to men and say, well, okay, so men find skinny women attractive, and women are trying to tell men, well, you shouldn't think skinny women are attractive, you should think fat women are attractive, and we're supposed to be okay with that. And he made a good point. Can you imagine walking up to a homosexual man and saying, oh, you think other men are attractive? Well, you need to stop. You're supposed to think women are attractive. Can you imagine the fucking shitstorm that would come from the fucking left wing? The fucking shitstorm that would rain down. But yet you can go up to men who find skinny women attractive and tell them, oh, you shouldn't be attracted to skinny women. You should be attracted to fat women. Oh, fuck you and your fat acceptance, okay? Just shut the fuck up, you fat bitch. Stop stuffing fucking ho-hos and ding-dongs in your mouth. Get some fucking exercise and shut the fuck up. All right, anyway, it has nothing to do with football. Now, see, that didn't take long. We're going to page 79 now. Page 79, first and second full paragraphs. Here we go. Oh, all right, good. While we're being controversial, he also, now I've talked about this before. And he has the balls to bring it up. And this isn't directly related to that, or is it? Yeah, no. So, you may not have noticed this, but I don't know if I want to say most. I don't have actual statistics. Many football players are black. Many college football players are black. Of the many black football players, interestingly enough, get ready to get offended. And I don't actually have the passage where he talks about this marked for reading, but it is in the book. Everything I'm about to say to you is in the book. Have you noticed, and I've thought about this myself independently, and so when I read him talking about this in this book, that's when I knew, even though this guy, I disagree with him about a couple of things, this guy has a spinal column and some balls. Have you noticed that of the many black football players in college and NFL, they share two things in common to a very large degree? Many, far more than 50% of them, are quite uneducated despite having gone to college on a football scholarship. And many of them are from the South, specifically the former slave-owning states. And he has the balls in this book to actually point out and ask the question that nobody wants to ask. Does nobody who cares about tolerance and diversity and multiculturalism and yada, 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 why do these people all look the other way when the colleges, which are the nexus of political correctness, heavily recruit black men from former slaveholding states? Because in the slaveholding states, see, because I was there, I owned slaves. Just like, all for those of you new to the show, we know that one thing we know from watching television and using the internet is that all people from the South are racist. All Southerners are racist. In the war between the states, which you people call the Civil War because you don't actually know what the fuck a Civil War is and because you've been brainwashed, in the War of Northern Aggression, when the North invaded the Confederacy, you see, everybody who fought on the side of the Confederacy, all of those soldiers were fighting for slavery. You see, unlike every other war in history, the War of Northern Aggression was a single-issue war. Every soldier on the Confederate side, owned slaves, and every one of them was fighting to protect slavery. Whereas, of course, all the soldiers on the Union side, none of them ever owned a slave, and all of them were fighting specifically to end slavery. You know, that's why Abraham Lincoln had to draft so many of them and implement the first draft in the United States of America, because they were so anxious to go and kill other people to end slavery, so anxious to do that, they had to be drafted and conscripted. Where was I going with all this? Oh, yeah. So the point is, college and NFL football is heavily laden with I want to be very clear. I'm not saying unintelligent black men. Uneducated. Or it's filled with black men who went to college on a scholarship to play football and yet somehow didn't learn anything while they were at college. Not because they're stupid. I mean, are some of them stupid? Well, of course they are. So most of them are statist. All statists are stupid. But it's not because they're stupid. It's because the emphasis, while they were at college, with their scholarship playing college football, the emphasis was put on the playing football part, not on the getting an education part. That's why the author, Greg Easterbrook, of this book, singles out the Virginia Tech program, because they put a great emphasis on the education aspect, making sure that players don't practice longer than they're supposed to, making sure the players go to classes, getting the players tutors to help them, and the whole thing I read you where you go to the buffet in order of your GPA, not in the order of how many yards you rushed or how many touchdowns you completed or whatever. So there's no emphasis. And so where is the fucking politically correct crowd on this? Where is the tolerance and diversity and multiculturalism? Where is the affirmative action people showing up and saying to the colleges, hey, why are you recruiting all these black guys from southern slaveholding states and shoving them through your college and not giving them an education and just churning them out? He also talks in here about the statistics of how many people, you know, and there's this whole, and I'll talk more about this later, there's a whole funnel that feeds the NFL. High school football feeds into college football, which feeds into the NFL. And there's all these people in high school football who think they're good, and many of them are good. And then they go to college, and there's so many goods. The number of players, and man, there's some revealing shit in this. The number of players who actually make it to the NFL is so mind-blowingly tiny, which makes sense, right? There's only however many NFL teams there are, I don't know. But there's only a limited number of teams, and each team can only have so many players. So it's like with any career path in life, you have to look at, okay, how many opportunities are there? It's like if you're going to go get a degree, right? You're going to get a degree in feminist studies. You have to ask yourself, how many job openings will there be for somebody with a PhD in feminist studies? How many job openings will there be for somebody with a PhD in philosophy? Versus how many job openings will there be for somebody with a master's in information technology? How many openings are there for somebody with a freaking, even a four-year degree in engineering, right? So the NFL as a career path is a very poor choice because there is an extremely limited number of options. So the colleges, the nexuses of political correctness, are taking all of these black men from southern states and shoving them through college, not doing anything to ensure they're actually getting an education while they're at college, and just shoving them through, and when they outlive their usefulness, and this is also well documented in the book, you know, when they outlive their usefulness, just booting them, taking away their scholarships, tossing them. And of course, I found this out, when you go into the NFL, in order to get, and I don't remember the exact details, but we will call it full benefits of being employed by the NFL, you have to be there, if I remember correctly, it's at least 3 years, or maybe it's 4 years, but there's a time frame. Anyway, as he shows with the statistics, what the NFL teams do is they use players, and then when they get near that point where they would become vested and be able to receive their full benefits, that's when the NFL drops them, and they get nothing. So you got all these people getting dicked over, and the question is, where is the affirmative action crowd? Where is Jesse Jackson? Where are those of you who find racism under every fucking sheet? Ha! Racism sheet, right? White sheets, Ku Klux Klan, get it? Oh, God, I'm hilarious. Where are those of you who constantly are looking for racism? All the time, everywhere you go. That's racist. That's right. Where are you when the colleges and the NFL basically just shit all over these black people, use them for their bodies, use them for their athletic prowess, and then dispose of them? But then again, yes, I know that. Thank you, Randy. Oh, I did promise you this wouldn't be three parts. All right. This is just part, though, I think, of the whole male disposability, right? Now, if this were happening to black women, there would be outrage. But because these are black men, it's not that big of a deal, right? Because they're only men. They don't really count. They don't really matter. We can, as a society, they can just be shit on, right? I mean, look at and here's the truth. If anybody gave a shit about black men, why would there be so many black men in prison? Especially for nonviolent offenses like drugs. I mean, so it's not really that much of a surprise to me that the institution of football, high school, college, and NFL, just shits all over black men even worse than it shits over everybody as a whole. Because in our society, even with political correctness and affirmative action and Jesse Jackson, I mean, again, the prisons are full of black men. The ghettos are full of black men. The football teams are full of black men who got fucked over in college and didn't get an actual education and have no goddamn future. He talks about a lot of, washed up people from the NFL. They got in the NFL. They thought, yeah, it was going to be great and all this other stuff. And then reality hits them. There's examples of all this stuff in the book. You know, the book that I haven't been reading from because I've been digressing. Hey, Randy, this might end up being three parts long. All right, here's what we're going to do. Here is what we're going to do. I have a plan. I have a plan. I have a plan. I always have a plan. Oh, shit. I'm going to fall over. I'm going to try to get out of the chair without hurting myself. Pick up my notes off the floor. There you got a couple of drags off of my electronic cigarette, which will soon be illegal in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. Because, god damn it, we've got an ordinance for that. Whatever the fuck you want to do in Fort Collins that might be akin to experiencing pleasure, we're going to make that shit illegal, because this is the People's Republic of Fort Collins, and it is run by motherfucking Puritans. And what we're going to do, you are still recording, right? Good. I will not have to get upset. We're going to go long on this one, and then we'll probably go a little bit long on the other one, but it'll still be two parts. It'll be long. It'll be longer than normal. But it'll still be only two parts, and then you won't have to kill me. What? What? All right, yes, I'll shut the fuck up and read. All right, here we go. Page 79, The King of Sports, first full paragraph.
that year, 52% of African-American football players at Auburn graduated. What Auburn meant in saying that Chizik, or whatever this coach's name was, C-H-I-Z-I-K, I'm going to say it Chizik. What Auburn meant in saying Chizik was, quote, a great mentor, unquote, was that he was good at getting players to win games. Auburn's athletic department could not have cared less about the nearly half of its black players that did not graduate. And apparently, the Auburn Board of Trustees and the Alabama State Legislature, Auburn is a public university, could not have cared less either. Had the athletic department, Board of Trustees, or state legislator cared, priorities would have been different. 2 years later, after the Tigers went 3-9, Chizik was fired. When Auburn lost, magically, he ceased being a, quote, great mentor, unquote. And this is another thing he documents really well in his book. You know, football coaches, they come in, as long as they're winning, they're great. As soon as they have a losing, again, it's not every single time, but so many times, losing season, you're gone. It happened here at CSU, Sonny Lubick. For so long, he was just fucking worshipped in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. Sonny Lubick could have fucking just walked out on the street and dropped his pants, and fucking people from around town would have run over and just kissed his ass. They would have licked his asshole. He could take a shit and not have to use toilet paper, because he could just take the shit and then like just stand up and turn around, and people would run up to him and lick his asshole clean. And then he lost some football games, and he was gone. He was fucking gone. Page 87. And in this book, Greg Easterbrook, I'll eventually remember his name, I have to keep looking at it. In this book, Greg Easterbrook documents many, many examples of the same thing. I think there's like a whole section of just college coaches that were the fucking everybody loved them, and they lost some games, and then they're idiots and they're gone. All right. And of course, he also documented college coaches that fuck 8-year-old boys in the ass in the locker room, and nobody notices that. Oh, he talks about that too. It's like you lose 5 football games in a row and your fucking job is on the line. You ass fuck 8-year-old boys, why, you're a great coach. We're going to protect you. That's the sickness that comes from the devotion to the game of football. All right, page 87, first full paragraph. And of course, so here's a little comparison for you. Think about this. In the colleges are supposed, well, all right, colleges are about teaching people how to work in cubicles and not question the HR department and obey the government. I mean, that's the real purpose of colleges. But in theory, the purpose of a college, what colleges tell stupid people is that colleges exist to provide young people with educations. So keep that in mind while I read this paragraph, and which puts some things into perspective. Hang on a second. You know what? I'm going to back up though, because I was just going to read one paragraph, but I was looking at this. I want to read more. Here we go. If football is mainly a plus for higher education, this hardly means colleges have the sport in perspective. In the 2010-11 academic year, the University of Texas had a $150 million athletic department budget. Ohio State's university athletic department budget was $132 million. Ohio State listed 458 staff members in its athletic department. In addition to the athletic department for a college. Think about this for a second. This is 458 staff members. All right, let me just read. Let me just read, because it'll all become clear. This is why I'm backing up. This whole thing is amazing. All right. In addition to dozens of coaches and trainers, athletic director Gene Smith supervised two executive associate athletic directors, two senior associate athletic directors, 12 associate athletic directors, a senior associate legal counsel for athletics, and a 9-person NCAA compliance office. In all, 68 people had titles reading associate or assistant director, and every one of them failed to detect the 2011 scandal that led to the resignation of Ohio State head football coach Jim Tressel. Broadly across collegiate athletics, coaches are not teachers who also coach. They do nothing all year long but their sports. The 12 football coaches at USC, the 4 men's basketball coaches, plus director of basketball operations at the University of Northern Carolina, they don't teach classes, they just run a business enterprise that bears the school's insignia. Even at a Division III college, in most cases, the head football coach, the men's and women's basketball coaches do not teach, just coach. Let me digress for a moment. He also talks about this in here, about how the athletic departments of colleges are not really part of the college. They are, in fact, almost completely separate business entities which simply use the college logo and, of course, use the facilities provided by the college, and by the college we mean by the taxpayers and by the tuitions of the students. And even with many of the college programs, they get money that is tax exempt, they get money the college has no access to, they get money from the taxpayers, they get money from the college, but they don't have to put any of the fucking money that comes into these sports programs. And all the, as he points out, most of the sports programs fall into this category, but he's picking on football, if you want to call it picking. He's singling out football because football is the one that makes shit tons of money. College football makes shit tons of money, and very, very little of it actually goes into the college as a whole in any meaningful way that is going to impact the lives and the educations of the average students, right? I mean, and football, again, football is singular because that's where the money is. I mean, like, how much money is the women's volleyball team bringing in? How much money is the men's swim team bringing in, right? How much money is the lacrosse team bringing in compared to how much money does the college football team playing on national television bring in? I continue reading now. What's that? That is an excellent question. Randy, hit me a... Oh. I was going to say, hit me heads up when we hit an hour. We've already gone over an hour. All right, we'll do a little bit, then we'll stop. Okay. The 9 people at Ohio State who did nothing all day but administer NCAA compliance surely enforced with intense vigor petty rules about cheeseburger. But when it came to corruption at the top of the football program, they saw nothing. Nothing. I really like this guy's writing style, too. He has a very... His writing style is similar to my speaking style. Before resigning, Tressel would state that he had known about the violations for years, but did not inform the athletic department because, quote, "I just didn't know who to contact," unquote. Using Google, it took me 45 seconds to get the names and phone numbers of the school's compliance officers. Despite doing a horrible job of administering the Ohio State Athletic Department, Smith kept his $1.1 million per year post. Or perhaps Smith did a great job.
Ohio State athletes may have broken rules left and right, but money kept rolling in. Which do you suppose the Ohio State Board of Trustees cares about, ethics or money? In the same year that Ohio State had 458 staff members in its athletic department, the school's English department had 242 staff members. Sports at Ohio State received significantly more staffing than English through nearly all, though nearly all, apparently I need some fucking English training. Sports at Ohio State received significantly more staffing than English, though nearly all Ohio State students take a course through the English department, while about only 1% of the student body participates in NCAA athletics. And sports received more staffing than English, despite the wide consensus that young Americans are inadequately educated in subjects such as English, while not a single person in the United States believes there isn't enough emphasis on football. Consider the University of Florida, a perennial powerhouse. For the 2010-11 school year, football brought here. This is going to read this because this talks about the money, what I was just talking about. Football brought the University of Florida $17.5 million in ticket sales and $48 million in television rights fees. Football expenses were about $12 million, leaving a football net of $53.5 million. Overall, Florida's athletic department took in $108 million and spent $94 million, netting $14 million. $6 million of the $14 million was donated by the athletic department to the university's academic budget. The athletic department kept the rest. College football, it's all about the money. Now, the NFL is all about the money too, but the NFL, at least in their defense, it's a business, you know, yada, yada, yada. We can say stuff there, yada, 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 nonprofit status, buying politicians, yada, yada, yada. But the way the college football, the amount of money that is just, and I knew there was a lot of money in college football, but until I read this book, I had no idea that the numbers were quite this large. All right, what do I want to read? Where am I? God, I am not making good progress here, am I, Randy? You're going to fucking kill me, aren't you? I know. Oh, yes. All right, here we go. This is going to be long. That's what she said. Hang on, hold your horses. I'm looking at how long this is going to be. That's what she said. All right, we're going to do this, and then we might shut it down. All right, let me just read. Page 102, for those of you following along in the book, or who think I'm just making this up. In 2012... Alabama head coach Nick Saban signed a contract that pays him $5.6 million annually, plus country club memberships and use of a private jet, plus health insurance and pension benefits funded by taxpayers because Alabama is a state university. Saban's haul works out to $66,000 per year per scholarship football player under his supervision. A month after Saban's deal was finalized, the Alabama legislature cut $150 million from the state's budget for public schools and universities. Now, again, this is where we see that Greg Easterbrook is not an ANCAP because, of course, you know, public schools and public universities are part of the problem, and the funding for them should be cut because they shouldn't exist. But, you know, again, it's in the context of a statist society, everything he's saying here makes sense. At the news conference announcing his contract, Saban repeatedly used the royal plural, saying, quote, "We wanted to stay at Alabama. We are staying at Alabama, and we're not interested in going anyplace else," unquote. His deal includes about $700,000 in potential bonus for victories and about $75,000 in potential bonuses for player GPAs, suggesting that at the University of Alabama, football is 9 times more important than education. In 2012, Urban Meyer signed a contract that will pay him at least $4 million annually as head football coach at Ohio State. Meyer's deal includes potential bonuses of $550,000 for victories and $150,000 for improvement of the team's average GPA, suggesting that at Ohio State, football is 3.7 times more important than education. Meyer also receives a $25,000 annual car allowance, reported by the school as if this were somehow different from income, fully paid membership in 2 country clubs, because, you know, when you're a rich white guy, 1 country club membership cannot be enough. When you're a rich white guy who's basically shitting on young black men in order to make large amounts of money. No. You need 2 country club memberships. $35 per year of personal use of Ohio State's private jet and a $250,000 bonus for moving expenses, suggesting Meyer needed to move a paddle wheel steamboat to Columbus. Again, I'm the sarcastic bit there. I'm not adding that. That's why I like this guy's writing style. $250,000 for moving. Where does all this money come from? Taxpayers, tuition. Sure, I mean, we just read some numbers about how much money football programs suck in. But remember, those football programs suck that money in because, first of all, people pay it. Second of all, because of media negotiations and media, you know, lockouts and media contracts where only a particular station can show the game, yada, yada, yada. This money comes from this team being able to associate itself with the college. I mean, if the CSU Rams or the Colorado Buffaloes or the Notre Dame or Texas Tech, whatever, if they were not associated with a college, if these people had to put these football teams together without the college association, would people pay this much money to come see them play? So much of the money that's coming into college football is because of the association with the college and because of the taxpayers. And do these coaches really need to be getting paid this much money and having this many benefits? Again, man, I am a fucking capitalist pig, but God damn it. I do believe, as a capitalist pig, you have to actually fucking somehow create value for other people to earn it. To earn that value. I mean, are these people really creating this much value? And you know what? To an extent, apparently they are. Because you dumb fucks out there are spending the money on these games. Alumni are donating the money. People are raising funds for fucking football, college football teams and shit. So, you know what? Maybe they are. Maybe they do deserve it. I mean, they're getting it. So if they can get it, maybe they do deserve it. I don't know. You know, I've always said that one of the things in our society is, you know, the old people, we have to protect old people from being scammed. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. If old people are so fucking smart, then why do old people keep getting scammed? You know, like the Nigerian chain letters or whatever. you know, the people who call them, oh, you want a cruise, just give me your credit card number. Oh, we have to pass laws to protect old people from getting scammed. No, if old people are so fucking stupid that they fall for that shit, they deserve to lose their money. I've said it before, I just said it now. Maybe the same thing. You know, and if you can scam an old person out of their life savings, if the old person's stupid enough to give you their life savings and you're smart enough to get it, maybe you deserve it. Maybe you do. And maybe the same thing should be said here. These coaches are just bending the football players and the colleges and the taxpayers over and just fucking them in the ass, just like their little 8-year-old boys. Just ass fucking them in the locker room, just like 8-year-old boys, and walking away with handfuls of cash. And you know what? If these football coaches can get away with this, because you let them get away with it, maybe they do deserve the money. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm the one who's full of shit. Maybe your lives out there are so fucking empty and devoid of meaning. Oh my, Randy, just take a nap because I'm on a roll. I am going to fucking preach it now. I am feeling the power of anarcho-capitalism. Maybe you motherfuckers out there, maybe your lives are so fucking empty. Maybe your soul, and I don't really like the word soul, but I'm using it anyway because I know it has religious connotations. Maybe your spirit, maybe your inner flame, your ghost, whatever you want to call it, your spirit, I said spirit. Whatever it is, maybe you are so empty inside and devoid of the ability to create, to be artistic, not autistic, but artistic, to be creative, to interact with other people, to love other people, to enjoy the world around you, to look out the window and see the snow falling, and even though it pisses you off, to be able to just appreciate the fucking beauty and majesty of the world around us, the clouds and the sunshine and the trees and the animals, and all the great things you can accomplish in your life if you try, and the potential and the And maybe you don't have any good friends that you can spend your time with, and maybe you don't have people you love and that you care about. Maybe your lives, and I use the term lives loosely in your case, maybe your lives are so fucking empty that watching college football creates so much value for you that you think these coaches deserve this much money because that's how much value they're creating for you. Now, I enjoy watching a college football game now and then. I'll be honest, I haven't watched a college football game in a long time because I don't have time and I don't have cable TV. And I'm sure you could probably watch it on the internet. Everything's on the internet. But it's not worth that much money to me. It's entertaining, but it ain't worth these kind of numbers. Because my life is not empty. In 2011... Jimbo Fisher signed a contract as head coach of Florida State football. Fisher received $2.8 million in pay, plus potential bonuses worth up to $755,000 for victories and $50,000 for academics, suggesting that at Florida State, football is 15 times more important than education. Fisher gets half his academics bonus if the team achieves an academic progress rate of at least 925. Under the academic progress rate, an NCAA disinformation system used to explain a Under the Academic Progress Rate, a NCAA disinformation system to be explained in detail later in this book, 925 is the equivalent of a D average. Florida State considers a D average to be a step forward for its football team. In 2011, Brady Hoke signed a contract that pays him $3.3 million annually as head coach at Michigan. He can receive up to $500,000 in bonuses for victories, with the victory bonus rising each year he remains on the job. Michigan had to cover a $1 million buyout to San Diego State University because it hired Hoke while he was still under contract to that school. For some reason, Michigan believed a coach who broke his promises to a previous employer will be honest with his new employer. In 2008, Michigan covered a $2.5 million buyout to West Virginia University when the Wolverines hired their previous coach, Rich Rodriguez, while he was still under contract elsewhere. For some reason, Michigan believed that a coach who broke his promise to his previous employer would be honest with his new employer. Discovering this was not the case, in 2010, Michigan gave Rodriguez a $2.5 million severance to fire him. Michigan, a taxpayer-subsidized public university, wasted a total of $6 million in buyout and severance payments in a short time in order to end up with the services of a second consecutive head coach who had walked out on his previous employer. Bad business decisions. Again, and again, this is a taxpayer-funded college. The money just keeps rolling in. Essentially, this is another example of a business making bad decisions and getting bailed out. It's just like when the bankers did all the stupid shit and Bush-Obama bailed them out. The automobile manufacturers did stupid shit. Bush-Obama bailed them out. Enron did stupid shit. Nobody bailed them out. Enron doesn't exist anymore. That is what capitalism looks like. Michigan State, instead of being bailed out by the taxpayers, their athletic program should be allowed to just fucking go bust. As should all of them. Pay for your own, you know, if football makes all this fucking money, why can't they pay their own way? In 2009, TCU imposed a 10% across-the-board spending reduction, excluding football coaching salaries. In 2011, Texas Tech froze salaries for faculty, then awarded a $500,000 raise to football coach Tommy Tuberville. In 2011, with the California state budget in meltdown, layoffs, education cuts, $14 billion in short-term debt, and $600 billion in unfunded liabilities, Cal head coach Jeff Tedford was the state's highest paid employee with a $2.8 million salary. His salary dwarfed that of California's second highest paid employee, Ronald Busettel, who was merely chief transplant surgeon at UCLA Medical Center. While head football coach at Penn State, Joe Paterno often said he declined raises because he was content with a modest income. This seeming humility became part of the Paterno mythology. Shortly after his death, Penn State paid Paterno's estate $5.5 million for his final year of coaching. That turned out to be his actual salary. The state of Pennsylvania paid Paterno's estate $13.4 million in deferred compensation. When Paterno said he was declining raises, what was really happening was that the value of his raises was being deferred, so that he could bask in admiration for feigned humility. And quite possibly some of these men have also fucked 8-year-old boys in the ass in the locker room, but we'll never know that for sure. It could be. It could be. I'm just not saying they did, just saying they could have. Football coaches have been known to fuck 8-year-old boys in the ass in the locker room and still be worshipped. Yes, that's the beauty. If you're a football coach, you can fuck an 8-year-old boy. You know, your football team can rape women. Doesn't matter. You're a football coach. You're a god. This is a good place to break. Let's break right here, Randy. Because now we're going to transition to... we're going to transition to high school football shortly, briefly. And then I am going to talk a little bit more about the funnel that goes into the NFL. All right, yeah, let's do it. Kill the recording and we'll take a little break and we'll come back. And I promise it's only going to be two parts.